Hello there. You're listening to Audacity, the Authentic Entrepreneur podcast. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. In this space, you will hear me talk about anything and everything you need to be an authentic entrepreneur so that you can not only grow a wildly successful business that gives you the wealth and freedom you dream of, but so that you can also stay true to yourself and your values, and also have massive impact with your work. I'm a mum of three, serial entrepreneur, business coach, and cheerleader for those of you who have been brave and audacious enough to set up in business. So, welcome to the Audacity Podcast. I am so glad you're here, and let's dive in to the episode. Today, I am joined by Sarah Keithley, who is going to come on and chat to us. Well, I'll let her tell her story. But first of all, Sarah, thank you for joining me. And how are you?
Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm really well, thanks. The usual busy day. But yeah, thanks so much for inviting me along. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Well, today we're going to be talking about pensions, aren't we? Which might not be the most glamorous subject, but you have got a really, really strong message, and it is absolutely something that our listeners and viewers need to hear. So I'm excited to delve in, really. So why don't you kick us off by telling us your story and how you got to be where you are today, if you would?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a pensions actuary, which is an actuary is a financial risk professional. So I actually spend most of my time talking to people that run pension schemes about how to manage their risk and how to make sure that they basically have enough money to pay pensions of the people that have them. Mm-hmm. Which is, and then I kind of got into that kind of by accident, really, many years ago through doing a master's degree. But more recently, I've got really interested in kind of the kind of inclusion side of that, so the gender equality side, making sure that you know, pensions actually work for everybody who needs one rather than just the people that are sort of typically tend to kind of benefit from that, so which are typically the people that are generally doing quite well economically anyway. We obviously met through Lean In last year when I was asked to speak at the Lean In Leeds conference about the gender pension gap. And I actually had only become kind of interested in that quite recently before I spoke at that conference. So but the more I look at, the more I sort of read about it, the more I researched it for this conference, the more I became kind of convinced that it's a really, really important problem that people aren't really talking about. And it's actually got quite a lot of interesting challenges that are quite difficult to fix, really. So I had originally sort of come to this as, you know, we're probably all aware of the gender pay gap and that being a problem. And I think I'd originally sort of thought, well, the gender pension gap is just an extension of that, really. It's just sort of, if you've got a pay gap, then you're obviously going to have a gap in how your pension builds up over time. And it kind of is partly that, but there's lots of other sort of subtle issues that go on as well. Mm. So things to do with kind of how having time off to raise a family affects your pension. It actually has a massive impact, way more than it probably should. And things like divorce as well that can have a disproportionate impact on women. So I started getting really interested in that only about a couple of years ago. But yeah, it's a topic that you sort of realise it isn't really being talked about. So I'm really, really keen to talk more about it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just dive straight in and shine a light on that. And so, like you mentioned, we met at the Lean In Leeds Unspoken Conference that I was organizing and you were speaking at, and I was blown away by what you were talking about specifically. Do you remember you had that graph of the gap?
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, you'll explain it better than me, but there's something about man and woman start at the same point of their careers.
Yeah, so essentially if you can start at the same point, have the same you know, starting, you can sort of save the same proportion of your savings through your career and go through a typical career. And that, you know, basically if you have, I think the illustration that we showed in that session was ended up with having £1 million difference in wealth by the end of their careers, and it was due to all sorts of factors, including starting with the pay gap itself, but also things like taking time off to raise a family, issues with lack of engagement and sort of the different ways that men and women engage with sort of financial, long-term financial investments, and that mm-hmm. having an impact in the different ways people invest. And it ends up all of these sort of small factors that you don't really think are that important sort of compound to this massive wealth gap. And it's mm-hmm. it's actually twice the current, the gender pension gap is actually double the current gender pay gap in this country. And that's a huge issue. That's, you know, that's a massive difference in how much freedom and independence you have in later life. So it's a really, really big thing. And there's no real policy at the moment that sort of tries to address it. We've got the sort of government stuff around the gender pay gap at the moment. Yeah, it's something we've got lots of work to do, I think.
Yeah, it's a real problem, and it's coming our way, isn't it? It's going to affect us.
That's
the scary thing, isn't it? You know, that this is not some sort of hypothetical statistic. This is going to hit us like a ton of bricks in the face when we reach retirement age if we don't do something about it.
Yeah.
So what do we do? What's say somebody's kind of bumbling along, they've maybe had a company pension or two, but they're not really sure where it is, or they're not sure how much there's in there, and you know, it's not really massively on their radar. Mm-hmm. What should they do?
Well, so I think I guess if you're a female and you're kind of worried about this impacting you, that one of the really interesting things that the research shows on this is that even when you compare kind of women who are typically very comfortable with their sort of day-to-day finances, maybe they're in a household where they are the one that takes control of day-to-day finances, they're quite comfortable, kind of, you know, quite well educated in a reasonably well paid job. If you compare that to a man of equal kind of background and sort of financial status, there's a lot lower confidence in things like pensions and long-term investments around women. And there's lots of reasons why that is. It's probably partly to do with the fact that the pensions industry was originally built just to cater for men, and it wasn't really built to cater for women. So even up until the late 80s, there wasn't equality in the kind of spouse provision in state pensions and things like that. So, you know, women weren't expected to have a male dependent, so they weren't given any protection for their male dependents.
So it's just assumed that the man would look after the wife, basically.
Exactly, yeah. And because it's such a long-term thing, like it builds up over someone's whole career, it has all these legacy issues. So there's probably lots of reasons why maybe women aren't as engaged in the long-term investment side of things. And I think, you know, it might be confidence. It might be just that you've got lots of other things on your plate and you don't want to think about it. But I think the kind of main message for me is, you know, pensions always sounds like something that you don't really want to think about, and it sounds quite scary, but it's really just about your own kind of financial independence, your own freedom later in life. So, you know, I think part of that, just trying to embrace it as a positive thing rather than a source of worry and sort of this big scary thing that you don't really know how to deal with. And thinking of it as a positive thing, like this is something that I can build for the future that will give me all the options that I want to have later in life. The consequence of having a gender pension gap is that actually we're sort of building in this kind of dependence on a partner that we actually, you know, we don't know what our circumstances will be in 30 or 40 years time, and we wouldn't tolerate that kind of dependence for ourselves in our sort of day-to-day lives. So why are we not, you know, taking our own futures into our own hands? I think it's just kind of that kind of recognition of the importance of it is really the first step. Obviously there's lots of practical things you can do as well.
I think that's a really, really important point. And it's, if you think about it, it's bonkers, isn't it? You know, I like to consider myself an independent, you know, director of my own company. I'm pretty much master of my own time and in charge of my own destiny. But you're absolutely right. It's do you think it's an education thing that we need to start right at the beginning and make pensions more appealing to women? Do you think there's some gender bias in the way that they're marketed to start with?
Yeah, I certainly think that's part of it. Because I don't know all the reasons that there is this difference, but the research certainly shows that there is this sort of engagement difference, and you know, there's probably lots of reasons for that, but education is certainly one thing that probably needs to happen more. I don't know if it's kind of that, you know, maybe the way that we maybe it's something that's passed down through our parents, because our mothers never had to worry as much about their own pension just because of the way the pension system was set up sort of years ago. So maybe it's something that's just a cultural thing, and we need to shift that gap ourselves. But you know, I think more and more of the sort of bigger companies, the bigger sort of pension providers, are sort of catching on to this and realizing that maybe the way they've sort of talked to their customers in the past hasn't been as inclusive as it could have been. And
yeah,
and but there's also a role for employers to play as well, I think, in kind of ensuring that, you know, there's all sorts of little quirks and things in the system that can trip you up if you're kind of a woman, and I think that educating women about those is really, really important. I think one thing that I find really, really surprising actually is that I'm a pensions professional, right? And I obviously, you know, look at all this stuff every day. When I started researching this talk for the conference last year, there was stuff I found out that I didn't know about. And that sort of blows my mind. It's kind of like, if I don't know this stuff, how does anyone else have a hope of kind of knowing what the important stuff is that you're looking out for? You know, stuff like the impact of divorce on women is this really disproportionate for their pension? And you know, I wouldn't have the first clue where to look if I wasn't a pensions person to find out that stuff out. It's just not talked about. So I think just trying to start the conversation about is something that would you know, helps. I basically try and do that just by chatting to people in the pub whenever they'll listen about pensions. Probably not the best read.
So we're talking about demystifying the whole concept, really, aren't we? It's like this scary never land sort of way in your future. Mm. Actually, we need to start breaking it down and planning now, because, you know, let's face it, the fairy tale isn't guaranteed. You mentioned divorce there as one of the sort of the big touch points. I think you mentioned earlier as well that having kids was where paths started to diverge in terms of the pension pot you can expect. If you can kind of map it out orally for our listeners, what are the kind of the sort of big life events along the way that have the biggest impact, in your opinion?
Yeah, so I think that obviously the first one is kind of starting out in your career and whether you engage with kind of your pension and your sort of financial future at the very start, because one of the things that, and this is kind of a geeky mathematical thing, but it's something that sort of applies to everybody really, is that this thing that we talk about with compound interest, it's one of the kind of big, has one of the biggest impacts on how much pension savings you end up having, is how early you start.
Okay.
So you can, like, a 10-year difference in when you start saving for your pension can sort of double or triple kind of the amount that you end up saving, even if you don't save any more money. It's just the timing. So a kind of, you know, starting early and sort of just saying, well, I know this is important, so I'm just going to start sticking some money aside, you know, as soon as I can.
What sort of age are we talking here, and how much? I appreciate you can't give financial advice, so yeah. For anybody listening to this, don't sue us. We are not giving advice. Yeah. This is a general chat.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll try to stay away from that. But yeah, I think basically, as soon as I started saving for, well, I worked for a pensions firm, but when I started, I didn't really know anything about pensions. But I sort of had this vague awareness that you're sort of supposed to start saving for something. And so I think I basically started as soon as I got my first proper paycheck, and I started saving like the minimum you possibly could, because I had like debts and stuff at university, and quite low income. But I think the point of just starting, putting something aside instead of worrying too much about how much you can put aside at the start, is really, really important.
And the government's good habits.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just I think sort of if you're sort of one of those people who actually hasn't maybe started saving it, or has maybe had a change of circumstances and stopped, that it's sometimes a bit of, it feels like a massive kind of question of, I don't really know how much I need to save, I don't know kind of where I should put my money. And the sort of standard advice, I think, is kind of work out how much, you know, work out when you want to retire, work out how much you need to retire on, and then work back from there. And I sort of think that's really bad advice, because it just seems really hard, and it's just a really good excuse to put it off for another day when you've got more time to think about these like really big existential questions
about overwhelming.
Where life going. That just seems like far too hard, and I never started that way. I just sort of said, well, like, I'll just start, and then you can sort of worry about it and find it along the way. But really just starting as soon as you can is a big, big, it has such a big impact.
Okay, so cool.
I sort of want to draw a graph at this point. But
we've got a mental, graph. Okay, so that's right at the starting point. See what, 21, 22, just finished university, we're assuming. Mm-hmm. And so then
you've got the raising a family point. So this, we obviously know that women are more likely to take more time off to have children and are more likely to, it's more likely to have an impact on their earnings when they're in their sort of early part of their life. But I think pensions is one of those things that is overlooked as part of this. And it's one of those things that if it sort of dents your savings as you go along, and that impact, if you're not careful, can have a very long ranging impact on your savings. So I think, there's a few kind of practical things to be aware of. So, for example, if you're employed and you're going off on maternity leave, your employer has to continue paying the full pension contributions for you based on your full salary, even if you take a drop in salary, but only if you keep contributing yourself, and your contributions will drop to whatever the percentage of your salary is based on what you're being paid on maternity leave. But if you stop because you think, oh, I'm going to have maybe some slight, money struggles.
I need the cash, basically.
Yeah, then you're basically missing out on a massive chunk of free cash from your employer that they'd have to pay you, basically. So that's something that people maybe aren't often aware of. So that's one big thing. And then it's kind of the point of, what happens when if you've maybe taken a pay cut following maternity leave.
So you've gone back part-time, yeah.
Yeah. So obviously that's going to have an impact on your savings. You're probably going to end up saving a lower proportion because you're paid less. But I think one of the really interesting concepts that came up when I was doing the research on this is the concept of you may well be in a household with somebody else who you're co-parenting with, and you're pulling your resources normally to make sure you can cover your finances during that time. But you probably won't have a concept of pooling your pension resources, and there isn't actually a concept of having a shared pension. You can't do that, so it's within your name. So it's kind of like you're basically saying, well, I'll just, the default is that you'll just take the hit on your pension part and your partner will continue paying maybe higher contributions than theirs, and that builds up a massive inequality over time as well.
Absolutely.
And so it's kind of like there are things that you can do about that. You can say I'll contribute slightly less to the household so that I can continue paying more into pension. Your partner could contribute into your pension to keep that gap shored up over time. These are all concepts that sort of seem a little bit alien to us because we don't really talk about them, but
yeah, it doesn't fit into the romantic dream, does it? It's so interesting.
Yeah, but it's,
I wonder how many women would take the same maternity leave if they knew they'd have a lot of a strong conversation before kind of saying, oh yeah, I'll take a year off.
Yeah, like you know that it's going to hit your finances for a short while, and it's probably going to have a little bit of an impact on your career, but if you knew kind of the impact on the long term kind of wealth you might have in future,
what you were actually sacrificing.
If you do the maths, which obviously no one will, but sort of, again, it's
that's how we've got you.
I have a graph that I can draw, or some kind of tool that you could use.
Well, if you have a tool, we can attach it to the show notes, so if people are interested.
I think there will be ones online that I can probably
Okay, cool. Use
towards, but yeah.
Okay, so that's kids. What's the next touch point?
So I think I'm not sure this is a milestone, but it's sort of the third kind of area which is the big drivers of this inequality is the sort of the actual engagement that you have. So it's understanding when you are saving for a pension, kind of what options you have, where you can invest your money, all of that stuff. I think that's probably the part sort of maybe mid-career where that starts to diverge a bit. So probably early in life, no one really likes thinking about their pension. No one really wants to get into the nitty-gritty of where am I investing, because you're young and you don't really want to think about that. But I think when you get to sort of mid-career, that it starts to diverge a bit. You maybe get if you're a man, you maybe are likely to spend a bit more time looking into that. I think it's maybe a cultural thing that maybe men just kind of feel more comfortable doing that. But it's something that, I think investing in one asset class compared to another understanding what impact that can have. Maybe sort of the cautiousness of, if you're worried about maybe the economic situation and move your money into kind of less risky investments, that can actually have a massive impact on your wealth in later life as well. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of educating yourself around what actually, long term, what sort of things that you should be investing your money in. That's kind of, you know, when you start building up a decent sized pension pot, that's the sort of stuff that it's sort of sensible to start engaging in and maybe start taking advice on. Mm-hmm. But if you then start to say, well, I'm not really sure about this, I don't really want to get involved, and don't take those steps, then I think that's the area where it can start to have a big impact as well.
Definitely.
So it's kind of that point where you're starting to have enough sort of savings built up that you can actually make a difference and do something different with them. It's just kind of taking those steps and being engaged rather than sort of saying, well, this all sounds scary.
Yeah. So let's flip the conversation slightly to business owners and entrepreneurs and leaders. Yeah. What can they be doing? What should they be doing to educate and protect their employees, you know, to get those good habits, those good responsible habits?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, at the heart of it is probably education is a big one. I think businesses can play a really big part in educating their people about these issues, because if you try, you know, there's some really good resources out there for people, the individuals to look at, but it's, you know, it seems like a very nebulous kind of big field, scary field, and you probably won't know exactly where to go. And there are sort of, you know, there are cowboys out there as well. So if you're an employer, you can maybe, if you're an employer, you probably have the resources to make sure that you're getting that information from a reputable source. Mm-hmm. And therefore you can point your employees to the right places. You can maybe even run sort of sessions for them, webinars and so on, for women that are about to go on maternity leave, for example, or for people starting out in their careers. And I think, you know, there's obviously a massive move for businesses these days to kind of, you know, looking after their employees and making sure that their well-being is looked after, and financial well-being is a big strand of that. So I think it's just financial well-being is probably something that's evolving at the moment and evolving into the sort of inclusion space as well. So it's kind of, financial well-being is one thing, but it's then making sure it's tailored so that the message reaches the right people and people that maybe aren't going to be as engaged as well. So I think it's just trying to have an eye on that, and maybe as part of any sort of well-being programs, just making sure that you're covering not just financial well-being but financial well-being for women as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having role models who can demystify this whole topic is so important. That's exactly why I wanted to get you on this, to be honest. And hopefully we'll reach some people and they'll think, shit, I need to sort this out. Mm. Tell us a bit about you. What's your why? Why do you do what you do?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually, because I sometimes sort of think to myself, oh, well, I've always been interested in kind of, you know, female equality and that kind of stuff and inclusion, but that's actually when I think back, it's not actually true. I think it's when I was kind of quite early in my career, I sort of never had this sense that sort of gender was really an important thing, and, you know, sort of scoffed a bit at the idea that, you know, people, you know, my gender might hold me back in my career. And it probably didn't at the very start, because I was in quite a technical profession, and, you know, basically all you had to really do was be good technically and pass your exam, and that's all fine. But when I sort of progressed in my career, it did sort of make me I sort of gradually noticed like small things that were impacting my progression. Okay. and the sort of profession that I'm in has historically been very male dominated, and, you know, I started to notice things that I think that probably had an impact on me, and probably had an impact on other female colleagues as well. And that started to get me interested in kind of, you know, the sort of gender issues and sort of equality issues. And
like what? What did you notice?
So one example was just one that really sticks in me, remember, is just having some kind of technical conversation with a colleague, you know, a disagreement about some factual thing, and being quite sure of myself that I was right, but, you know, because this other person was so kind of confident and sure of themselves, I sort of backed down and said, oh, you're probably right then, and then going away and checking later and be like, I was right about that, like, what, you know, why did I back down, what's that about, and just sort of thinking, hold on a minute, is this something that I do without realizing? And then one other thing that really stuck with me was I quite often we have these sort of technical seminars that we go to kind of after work that we do to sort of, you know, keep our knowledge, and quite often the ones that are kind of very sort of technical and actuarial focused are quite, so the audience will often be kind of pretty close to 50-50 men and women, but they're quite often, the speakers will be male, the host of the event will be male, and all the people who ask questions in the audience will be male. I remember once going to an event where this had happened and thinking, like, I just had enough of this. I'm just going to ask something. I don't care what I ask. I'm just going to put my hand up and ask a question, because I can't go to another event where no women speak, even though there's loads of women in the audience. And I remember I had this experience at this event, and I think I posted on LinkedIn about it, and I got massive like response to it. Loads of people in my firm kind of emailed me who I'd never met before, saying, I saw your LinkedIn post, and this is really important for me to talk about, why, you know, why in this profession is there this problem? Like, we have, you know, it's been male dominated for years, but actually nowadays it's not that male dominated, but there's still this kind of sort of slight issue. So that kind of led me to actually get more interested in this topic. And it, you know, when you start talking about it, you start to end up coming across people that are interested in it as well. And that's just sort of built from there. So that then culminated in me doing something that, like, kind of led to where I am now. So I now have like a diversity and inclusion role in my firm. So it's kind of a side interest. But I actually founded the D&I committee in our firm. We never did anything on D&I before. And the reason that came about was because I wrote a letter to our CEO in response to our gender pay gap report, just sort of saying, you know, I don't agree with some of the reasons that you've cited for this existing. I don't think you're doing enough. And that kind of then led to them saying, actually, you know, obviously that could have gone very badly, but they were actually really good and said, we agree with you, we want to do more on this, so can you help us? So that actually just threw me sort of noticing the impact it had on my own career and not wanting that to sort of be perpetuated, just kind of led me to sort of stick my head up a bit and say, I want to do some, I want to do more about this. Yes. And that just led to more and more kind of, it just snowballed, really. I just sort of got more and more involved in these kinds of issues, and then it led on to the sort of pension angle of it and the sort of financial inclusion side as well. So yeah, it's just kind of snowballed from sort of very small, kind of noticing small things, and it gradually becoming a sort of figure in my mind, really.
Well, that's what it takes, isn't it? You know, we need people who notice things aren't right and stand up and do something about them. Don't just moan, do something about it, and make the changes. Thank you so much for listening. It's been great to have you here, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode. If you like what you hear and you'd like to connect, head on over to claireackers.com. And I'm most active on LinkedIn. Just search for Claire Ackers. That's Claire with an I and an E. See you next time.